Welcome to the Film Florida podcast. I'm John Lux, and I'm the executive director of Film Florida. Before we get to our interview, if you're not already a member of Film Florida, please consider joining at filmflorida.org. Please also consider going to our website and donating $20.25 for our 2025 fundraising campaign. Visit the Film Florida merchandise page at filmflorida.creator-spring.com to purchase Film Florida t-shirts, sweatshirts, coffee mugs, and more. All merchandise proceeds go to the Film Florida Filmmaker Grant and Scholarship Fund. Artie Maleshi is an Emmy and SAG Award nominated stuntman and stunt coordinator. Artie's worked on close to 150 major titles, including some of the biggest Florida-based projects like Bad Monkey, Moonlight, Burn Notice, Miami Vice, both the series and the movie, Too Fast, Too Furious, The Waterboy, Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, My Girl, and Parenthood, just to name a few. We talked to Artie about his stunt work, the evolution of his craft, some great behind-the-scenes stories, his hobbies, including obedience competitions for dogs, and more on this episode of the Film Florida podcast. Here's my conversation with Artie Maleshi. Welcome to the Film Florida podcast, Artie.
Glad to be here.
So let's kind of start at the beginning. Give us your backstory. Where'd you come from?
Well, I was born in New York, moved to Miami Springs when I was a little kid. And my mom was very athletic. She was a mechanical engineer. She kind of raised me at a recreation center. My father had left when I was about seven. So I was kind of on my own to sort out what I wanted to do. And I was very adventurous. I was very water orientated. If there was water, I was going to go see what was under it, which led to me eventually going to college to get a degree in marine sciences, which basically I studied ichthyology. And that eventually landed me a job at the Miami Sea Aquarium, where my job first was taking care of sea lions and penguins. Then I moved to become a diver and then the head diver. And I finally got on the collecting boat, which was my goal. So one of our jobs was to help films do things that were necessary underwater. And the biggest ones were the James Bond movies. We were involved with catching all the sharks, making sure the sharks swam through the scenes that were needed from A to B. There was a team of two of us that did that. And we got to meet people, Rico Browning, who was the original Creature from the Black Lagoon, and of course, Flipper and all that. Bill Griffey, who pretty much put me into the front of the camera first, playing a shark in a film that he did called Mako Jaws of Death. Whenever you saw the fin swimming around, that was me with either on my back or on some kind of underwater scooter. So then I rodeoed and I raced dirt bikes as hobbies, and people would just start asking me, hey, do you want to, you know, get hit by this car? Do you want to fall out of this building? Or you want to do whatever? And I said, yeah, I'll figure that out. So I did. And working for the Sea Aquarium for about 8 years, finally kind of started getting involved with them. The Italian films were coming into town a little bit more, and that's how I got my SAG card, actually, working on everything from car chases, fights, falls, you name it, they always asked me to do it. Then that progressed eventually, still staying with Rico and the crew doing the bonds, and went over to Malta to do the original Race of Titanic. And also Popeye was over there at the time. So we did all the water work there. And at that time, I pretty much went into the business full time and kind of never looked back from that point on. Been busy 90% of my life.
So you've been a stunt coordinator for a lot of great films and television series. I mean, you mentioned a couple of them there just in passing. For those who don't know, let's take a step back a little bit. Talk about the main responsibilities of your role. What does a stunt coordinator do?
The first real movie I was a stunt coordinator on was called The New Kids with James Spader. So that was the beginning of time for me to learn what it all took. First, you have to be a fairly reasonably good stunt person, so that if you're going to hire people to do stunts, you should be able to tell them the right and wrong way to do it. And I can absolutely tell you the wrong way because I did it to myself. So your first and foremost responsibility is safety. You know, hiring people that you feel confident can do the job, helping them do the job correctly, helping with equipment and bringing all the things that take place to make the stunt happen. The stunt basically is an accident you know is going to happen. So you work backwards from the worst case scenario that could happen to you that day and try to avoid that. You are also responsible for, you know, not just the hiring, but all of getting together with all the department heads to make the particular stunt work properly. If you need construction to build something, or the art department to put something where you need it for a fight, or special effects obviously works close with us if we're going to blow people up, you know, transportation to make sure we got the cars we need, so on and so forth. We touch into almost every department, including course hair, makeup, wardrobe, because we're doing doubles. So that's my responsibility, is to make all that happen. So it's obviously hiring everybody and showing up on the day ready to do what's asked of us.
And how much rehearsal time do you guys get, or do you even get any for some of the stunts you do?
It depends on the stunt and the show. Television, you hardly get any rehearsal time. You're lucky to maybe get a half a day to yourself, and then if the actors are involved, you'll bring the actors in to do the other half of the rehearsal to bring them up to speed on what's needed from them. The good part with me is that everything that they asked to do, we've done before. So I'm just doing my homework on getting everything ready. But in my car stunts, you have to rehearse timing and everything and speeds and this and that. But that's done fairly quickly. Fights are the ones that take the longest because you're choreographing it all and you're sorting it all out. You're saying, you know, you're showing it three business to the director or whoever, saying, you like this, you don't like it. Then you'll go to the actor, say the same thing, and he'll go, no, I don't like any of that. Now you got to start all over. So that's television world. Movie world, you get a lot of time to rehearse. You could even rehearse the car crashes. You know, you'll get extra cars and things to just make sure that it really exactly what everybody wants and it's going to happen the way that everybody thinks and so on and so forth. So movies like Fast and Furious, Transporter, even like Wild Wild West, all the horses and everything, all those movies, you get plenty of time. But TV is a different ballgame. You know, they want James Bond stunts on no budget, no time. You got to really be paying attention.
Yeah. Now, one of your most recent works as a stunt coordinator was for the Apple TV Plus series Bad Monkey, which was filmed in the Florida Keys. Do you have any fun on-set experiences from this project, or were there any particularly challenging stunts to coordinate?
Nothing particularly challenging. It was fun because it was in the Keys, and that's always a fun atmosphere to work in. We had my dog doing a sequence as a watchdog, so that was fun. He likes to do that stuff. The actors were good, the settings, everything was fun to do. The coolest thing we did was push this golf cart off the seawall into the water and had to, you know, rig that up to make that look like it should. And you know, it's hard if you drove a golf cart really or pushed it off a seawall, it would just fall straight down. But they wanted some air time, so we had to build a ramp and make that happen, and that worked extremely well. And then some other things, you know, just the foot chases and things, a little bit of car stuff. So,
yeah. So, in addition to Bad Monkey, you've worked on a number of titles filmed in Florida, like Waves, Moonlight, Burn Notice, Miami Vice, both the series and the movie, The Waterboy, Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, My Girl, Parenthood, and that obviously is just some of them. Among all of those, like, is there anything that kind of sticks out from any of these projects from, you know, that you take pride in working here in Florida?
Well, I think being able to get the bigger movies here, like Transporter 2, that was extremely fun to do. We had a lot of great car chases and crashes and jumps and all of the above. And same with Fast and Furious 2. This was basically said, here it is, figure out how to make that happen. So we did. And all the bigger movies have always turned out to be quite a resilient bit of work that we are all proud of having worked on. The TV show Burn Notice was very exciting. That was, you know, basically 8 years of my life. That was, again, a James Bond movie every weekend. That's what they wanted, and we gave it to them, and we got nominated for quite a few awards for that show. And unfortunately, that was the last show we really did here, with the incentives going away at the end of that period of time. So we haven't got that type of momentum going back again. And we did just do the new Dexter series here, and a TV show called Pulse. But they really are supposed to be in Miami, but of course they're filmed in New Mexico and Los Angeles. But again, going back to the fun films, I really still enjoy the older films, like, you know, you were talking about Parenthood and those kind of films back in those days. And I was doing two or three of them at a time.
Mm-hmm.
I was just running around crazy and then trying to rodeo on the weekends. It was a, you know, good thing I was young and dumb then.
Now, I want to ask you specifically about another Florida-based film, Too Fast, Too Furious. And there was one particular scene in watching that. I want to see if you can discuss a little bit of the process a little bit more in detail, where Brian and Roman speed through a marina here in Florida where they search for cars amid all the different boats. Share a little bit about the coordination that's required to do a scene like that over a longer space.
I actually directed that, and the trick to that was I have this vehicle. It's a three-wheel motorcycle. It's called a Can-Am Fighter, and I mount cameras on that. So I can do the pushing, the action. I can pull the action. I can stop and just be a regular camera on sticks, like, and or whatever I need to do. I can move in and out of the action. It's just I'm all over the place with that vehicle. And that was how I filmed almost all that entire movie with that. And it's a real good tool. And we choreographed everything to be according to what the director and the script said. But then we just added some little stuff like the boat on the forklift thing, you know, breaking through the guard shack deal. And the doubles were very good. They could drive very well, as you could see. But one of the most interesting things on that movie, though, was that we had to teach all the actors how to drive.
Mm.
Soki, she, Benny Hanna's daughter, you know, she never drove anything. She was either in a limo or something else. And we had to teach her to drive a stick shift and they'll be able to drive fairly quickly. Paul Walker, he could drive, but we had to teach him how to stunt drive because there was a scene where he comes flying up towards the camera, spins the car sideways, and hits a mark, and the camera moves and it's him.
Yeah.
He wanted to do that so badly himself that we just practiced, and got him where he could really do it. But that particular boat scene was fun to do because it was kind of all over the place. The setting was real Miami, you know, and everybody had a good time.
Yeah. Now, in addition to a lot of your behind the scenes work, you've also been in front of the camera as an actor in a few projects, including two episodes of Miami Vice back in the day, but also a number of other projects since then. How is your approaching to traditional acting impacted your other roles kind of in the stunt side of things?
Well, first, I'm the worst actor ever. I get put in those positions not by choice. It's just kind of like, okay, we need this stunt done, and we need you to speak at the same time or do this or do that. So I just say, okay, whatever, and I get it done. It's not my most favorite thing to do, but it has to be done. And it's funny because sometimes we're looking for stunt guys that can act. And most of those come out of the live show world.
Yeah.
You know, because they got to do all that. So a lot of the people that work for me are from the live show world because of that. Yeah, it's not my most favorite thing.
That makes sense, though. Now, you've coordinated all kinds of different stunts. We talked about a couple of them, and you mentioned some of your early underwater work. Do you have a specific kind of stunt that you like coordinating the best?
I like water work. I like boat chases. I like the underwater stuff. Airboats, the Everglades. That's kind of another one of my fortes. And those are, to me, the funnest, but I still, of course, love car chases. I do a lot of animal stuff. I do horse work, too. And I like working the animals, but probably if I had to pick anything ever, I'd go underwater and hopefully I was in the Bahamas filming another James Bond movie.
You know, I'm curious though, like, was there a time going all the way back to when you started your stunt work where I know you had mentioned you kind of happened to fall into it almost by accident, but was there a time when you actually like said to yourself, wait a second, I really love this. This is what I want to do for real. Or did it just kind of happen accidentally?
No, there was the time, like I said, when I went to Malta and that part of my life, I came back from there saying, this is what I'm going to do the rest of my life.
Yeah.
even though that was very water orientated, I'd still dribbled and drabbled in car chasing and falls and fights and stuff on other films. And it just was, obviously the money was really good. It was fun. I got to do things that I would do basically for free anyway. And one of my mottos is really to say, don't get hurt for free.
Yeah.
I've broken a lot of bones not working, you know, hobbies.
Yeah.
Even though you can fall into it, you got to have a passion that this is what you really, really want to do. Because it's the hardest way to make a living. Because there's no perfect equation on how to do it. I tell people it's easier to be a doctor or a lawyer. You go to school for however many years it takes. You come out, you got the certificate, you hang on a wall, and you go, here I am. Now I just got to get some business. Stunt world, you never stop. I mean, it takes 5 years for a stunt person, generally speaking, to be able to make a reasonable living. And, you know, we're kind of inundated with a lot of different types of stunt work these days. There's a lot of more technology involved. So it's a little easier for people to get involved with using their one or two specific abilities. Where in my day and age, you had to have a lot of tools in your belt if you wanted to really make a living. I mean, you had to be able to do anything and everything. You could not really turn anything down. You wanted from the high falls to being lit on fire, to car hits, the chases, the fights, and this, that, and the other. Now people are making a living just because they're a good gymnast, being able to do the aerial work and the wire work, or a good martial artist. They don't really do anything else. But because of the way the shows are going these days, it's working for these young kids. And it's become a whole new dimension of stunt people. So yeah. I'm old school. I try to keep it that way. I don't count on a lot of computer generated AI issues unless that's the kind of movie I happen to be doing.
So tell me a little bit about the advice that you would give to someone that does want to kind of follow in your footsteps. Like, where do you start and how do you get a reputation to then therefore get hired?
Well, first you need to be a really good athlete, a generally good athlete. Then you hopefully have some type of specialty, like we were just talking about, martial arts or gymnast. Maybe you're a high diver. Maybe, you know, you're a race car driver, motorcycle race, whatever. You have one tool that you can do and stand out doing. Then it's up to you to learn to do the rest and to learn the film business. You can learn the film business by being an extra or going and being a PA or anything. Get your ask questions, get involved, know what each department's doing in front of you. What's going on here? I want to learn all this. So that's the go to school part. You know, you can go to film school and learn a lot of stuff, but you're just basically going to learn how to make a movie. You know, maybe you want to be a director or producer, whatever you want to be. That's what film schools do. Film schools do not teach you how to be a stuntman. There are stunt schools. Some of them are credible. Some of them are taught by people that just are out of work and need to make money somehow. Some of them are taught by people that think they know how to do stuff, but they don't really. They don't have the experience. And that's the same with stunt coordinators nowadays, too. Like I said in the beginning, to me, you have to be a really good stunt person to be a coordinator. So times are changing.
Yeah, yeah. Artie, where can people learn more about you, your work, future work, anything that they can keep an eye out for?
IMDb, which is the International Movie Database, that pretty much says what you have done. And not everything gets put in there, and sometimes it gets put in wrong. But it's a basic way to follow somebody. You know, my email is a way to get me your headshots. I always promote that. And I do file everything away according to gender and size, shapes, colors. You know, I file it all. So if something shows up and I can't think of somebody off the top of my head, I go back to my files and look. So that's a good way, especially if you are a newcomer and you happen to be a good double for somebody and have a skill level. Well, there's your first break of life. Now you're coming into the business, you're able to get in the union, which is important if you want to really make this a profession. Non-union work is always available to people, but you find they're not as experienced as you would hope they would be. And my email address is amistunts@aol.com, and anybody's welcome to send me an email.
Excellent. Now, you talked a little bit about some of your other hobbies. Tell us a little bit about that. What do you do for fun?
A lot. Well, first, foremost, I love training animals. I train competition canine dogs. I train my horses. I do team roping and things like that. I do a lot of boating and fishing and diving. A lot of Everglades stuff. I love adventuring into places maybe no one's gone before. I have a camper that goes in my truck. I tow an off-road vehicle behind me, and we travel the country looking for crazy places. But, you know, mostly if I was just woke up in the morning and my day starts training my dog, I live on a little ranch in Davie. The horses are here. Do whatever I can with that. And then, you know, I like building things too. So there's always something going on. I don't compete in rodeo work too much anymore unless the team roping just happens to be available. And, you know, I still like to take the motorcycles out and go cruising and stuff like that. So it's a little bit of everything.
Tell me a little bit more about the competition for the dogs. What is that all about? How do you do that?
Well, it's a thing called Schützen, which means protection dog in German. And they compete in a system of categories. You get points for it. First, your obedience work. You have a 20-minute obedience routine the dog has to do off-leash. It's basically healing, sitting, staying, doing a lot of different physical activities, you know, retrieving dumbbells over jumps, going over walls, doing a lot of things like that. Then we do tracking. We set up a track for the dog. It'll be a 300-foot track, basically 100 yards, made into look like an R. And on each leg of that is an article. The dog has to find the article, lay down, which says he found it. And to be perfect, he can, once he starts the track, he can never change his speed. Makes a corner, he has to make it the same speed. He finds the article, he lays down. You go show the judge you got it. So then you go to the guard work, and the dog has to search 6 different hiding spots. Basically, we use a thing called blinds. They look like teepees. They go to each one of those looking for the bad guy. Now, the hard part is they know where the bad guy is. They've done this enough. They know he's in the last one. So now the obedience is coming in. The dog has to go from one to the other and actually search it. And I'll go to, there's 6 of them until he finds the bad guy. Then he goes and he sits and barks and barks and barks at the guy. And then you call the dog off. You tell that person to come out of the blind, and he'll walk out 30 feet. You lay your dog down, and that guy makes an escape. The dog attacks the person's arm where the sleeve is. The guy fights him, and then when he freezes, the dog has to stop and just bark. And then this goes through a different series of things where eventually there's what's called a long bite, where another decoy will come out from the end of the field, which is 50 yards, start making noises, starts advancing fast towards the dog and the handler, and you let the dog loose, and the dog takes that guy out. And then he stops, the dog stops, and that's pretty much the competition. So,
wow. So one way or another, you're coordinating.
Yeah, coordinating my dog every second. Yeah, so yeah, people go, how long does it take to train that dog? Oh, 24 hours a day for the rest of his life.
Yep. Well, Artie, this has been great. Thanks for spending time with us to share your stories about some of the great work you've done in Florida and beyond, and for helping our audience better understand your craft. We really appreciate you being on the Film Florida podcast today.
Well, thank you for having me. It was very enjoyable.
Thanks for listening to the Film Florida podcast. For more information about Film Florida, go to filmflorida.org and like or follow our social media pages. If you're not already a member of Film Florida, please consider joining at filmflorida.org. Please also consider going to our website and donating $20.25 for our 2025 fundraising campaign. Check out the Film Florida merchandise at filmflorida.creator-spring.com, and please remember to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast.